Can Munster and Leinster both get to the Champions Cup semi-finals? Why did an Irish rugby player have to drink a pint of red wine? And what is going on with the IRFU and Dunnock Orion? It's all coming up on The Hard Yards.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
With fantastic support, half of Ireland were here. The rest of them are hopefully smiling at home.
We had a bet earlier in the year, €20, that if we won it, I wouldn't cry, but it's the best £20 I'll ever spend.
Here's Hayslip. Well, he picks it up quickly and off he goes. Drops it off to Hinkshaw! Robbie Hinkshaw scores it! Rugby history! Ireland beat the All Blacks for the first time!
Hello and welcome to episode 9 of The Hard Yards, the Sports Joe Rugby podcast. I'm Andy McGeady. With me in studio is Sports Joe Rugby reporter Pat McCarry.
Morning, or hello everybody.
Kev McLaughlin.
Hey Andy.
And former Ulster and Ireland man Stephen Ferris.
What about you?
What about you? Yeah, you're getting your this geography making early entrance here. As the newest member of the podcast studio, we were going to initiate you, but then it might be easier to tell us about your initiation when you got to the Ireland squad, because you came in with a few players.
I don't think you'd be able to keep up with my drinking, to be honest with you. So your initiation might fall flat in its face. But yeah, it's funny, like all the new caps. Obviously, it's a great day. It's brilliant. But that night, you know, you have to stand up in front of maybe an audience of 300 or 400 people, a lot of alligators, the opposition team, and you have to get up, down a drink, and then sing a song, and then the night goes on and you're just getting drunker and drunker, and the likes of Ron Nogara is walking up to you with a pint glass of red wine, and he drinks a pint glass of red wine, you drink a pint glass of red wine, and then the next thing somebody else is walking up to you with a drink. So as Kev will maybe talk about, it can be a long night, or in his case a very, very short night.
So this was back, just to place this, this was the last international at the Old Lansdowne Road, yeah, against the Pacific, yeah, Islands. Yourself, Jamie Hayslip, Luke Fitzgerald, all made your debuts that day. So there's 3 years getting hazed.
Yeah, well, Luke Fitzgerald, a young chap, he disappeared early. He just took himself off.
He's a sensible young man.
Yeah, sensible. He just got out of there pretty quickly. I liked a tipple or two, so I stayed on, and Jamie stayed on. But it's amazing even chatting about myself, Jamie and Luke, the way all our careers have went completely different ways, and Luke and myself are now retired and Jamie's still going, you know, he's almost approaching 100 caps for Ireland. So it's amazing how everybody's different and everybody goes in different directions. And I think, Pat, you touched on that before, about, you know, our three careers, getting our first cap on the same day and then all going different ways. But yeah, good memories from that night.
What did you sing?
To be honest, I can't remember. It was probably like Fresh Prince of Bel Air or something like that. Something easy that I wouldn't forget, and make an idiot of myself. But yeah, good times. And Kev and myself were chatting just off air earlier on, and he had a bit of a wild night over in Paris not too long ago.
Yeah, that was your debut in Paris against the French, yeah?
No, it wasn't actually. No? So I played against Italy the week before for my first cap, and then, yeah, this guy, I don't know if you know him, guys, my name is Stephen Ferris, had been injured for the Italian game and came back.
Injured, eh?
And came back for the French game, so I travelled with the squad but wasn't actually playing, so I be honest with you, I was totally in the comfort zone.
Like, yeah, you were a real target that weekend.
I had a lovely autumn weekend in Paris, you know what I mean? Like going out drinking coffees, chilling out. I wasn't playing and didn't see it coming at all. And Fez had a couple of mates for this initiation. I was flying solo and we lost the game. We didn't play particularly well. So I was like, there's no way they're going to do it this night. And then I think, who was it? Rog tapped me on the shoulder, I think it was. And he had a pint of something or other in his hand, and two pints of something or other in his hand. He knocked one back, winked at me, handed me to hit the other one. I had to knock it back. And I started off with a huge amount of enthusiasm and gusto, and you know, I was feeling pretty confident about the whole thing. And about 5 or 6 of the Irish lads got involved. I was like, this is no problem at all. And then I saw the French players' eyes start to light up. And a couple of them I remember, in particular, William Servat came over with one of those bowls of you know, the bowl gin and tonic type glasses of pasties, a mint spirit, and passed it over to me. Again, winked at me, knocked it back, and that was the turning point. and it all went downhill from there. And I had some conversations that night that I probably should never have had.
That was the end of your lovely weekend in
Paris. Yeah. My lovely weekend in Paris. Like, I don't think the conversations I had that night were the best thing for my Ireland career, let's just say that.
so you're throwing people under a bus. Roger's getting the mention here now by both of you. Then the shoe must have been on the other foot at some point. Did you give some poor Egypt then a taste of their own medicine, did you?
Yeah. Kev, were you over in Argentina? No, you weren't in Argentina. And it was like my second or third cap. It was when the B team travelled before the World Cup in 2007.
They left all the big lads
At home, and us boys, the B team, went over and rocked up over there. And I can remember Tony Buckley. Like, that guy is a man mountain, like 135 kilos.
He's a large human, yeah.
And like, guys just trying to hold the big man up, and he was just completely all over the shop and like punching holes in the wall, fell off the bed and cut his eye open, and just in a completely absolute madness. And it's going to be madness when the post-match function is in a nightclub. and you walk up and you're expecting, you know, you're suited and booted and you're ready to walk into this lovely hotel and get yourself a nice steak.
So you at least you have to keep it together for a time, usually.
Yeah, and, you know, an old glass of Argentinian Malbec, you know, just sitting, chilling out, taking it easy. The next thing, we get off this bus and there's like promotional girls lined up either side of the nightclub, and we're like, right, boys, here we go. And you had mad men on that tour, like Neil Best and myself and
yourself, yeah. And Best, he had a reputation at the time for, you know, sitting down and just, you know, how can we hit our next opponent really hard?
Yeah, like, Bestie was just mad. At least I had a bit of purpose to what I was doing. He just ran around trying to kill people. I caught up with him in the end, but yeah, Bestie was a big, massive hitter. I can remember, like, just flooring guys, yeah, in a Cardiff game at home. And if you go on the YouTube or anything, and, you know, was it Lolly Lekiri that hit in one of the Autumn Internationals? And he punched above his weight too. He was only maybe 105 kilos, absolutely shredded. I think he's overworking in Singapore at the minute. Just shows you how crazy people's lives can go post rugby, but a hard, hard man.
You were saying, Stephen, there was I think maybe he probably felt that fear or the guilt the day after, and there was a homeless chap who was on the streets in Argentina that he came across.
Yeah, that was after that trip, and we were leaving the hotel, and Bestie being Bestie, he's like, I'm not taking all this kit home. I was like, I don't need all this here, I've got plenty of kit. And he walks out, and I go out with him. I have like a couple of hoodies or something, and that are like 5XL. I'm not going to need them. And we walk out, and it's like 2 degrees in Buenos Aires, and walk out the door, and of course Bestie sprints across the 6-lane motorway with his bag of kit, gets to the middle, and there's this old man who seemed to be lying there for months on end, and covered in sleeping bags, and Bestie just lifts the sleeping bag up. Right, mate. And I'm like, what's going on here? He goes, here, do you want some kit? And he just leaves him a bag of kit, and I throw him a couple of jerseys and a coat or something. And the homeless guy just looked up to us and thanked us. And that was just Bestie. He didn't really care. He just kind of got on with life and didn't take life too seriously. And even when he was playing for Ireland, yes, of course, it meant the world to him to represent his country. But he never took it too seriously. He always had a smile on his face and always had a bit of crack. And to be honest, he probably would have had a lot more caps if he had been this, you know, religious robot that just wanted to play international rugby. But I think that's why everybody liked him.
Right, so...
I could talk about Bestie all day.
How many stories
do you want?
I'm sort of being told to, you know, move Fez off Bestie stories, but we might come back. Big weekend ahead of us in the Champions Cup. Big weekend for the Irish provinces as well. Leinster against Wasps. That wasn't a good fixture for Leinster last season, Kev. Wasps turned Leinster over badly twice.
Yeah, Wasps are a serious team. They play in a certain way where they don't have maybe the best defence in the league, but they score lots and lots of points. They're kind of Real Madrid model. Whatever you score, we'll score more. And when you look at some of the attacking talent they have, Willie LaRue, Christian Way, Curtly Beal, Cipriani, Joe Simpson, these are guys that like to counter-attack. And what's really exciting for me is Leinster are going to go out to play as well. And what Lancaster and Leo put together now is a team that keeps the ball in hand and goes. And the likes of Joey Carberry and some of these new guys are bringing that real attacking intent. And what Johnny's going to have to avoid is kicking to that back three, like, because they will run it back all day. And then the likes of Joe Simpson, in particular, Joe Wade, Joe Simpson, Christian Wade are so dangerous in any space. And Leinster are just going to have to be watertight in their D. I think it was a Worcester scored 33 points again.
Yeah, yep.
So they concede points, like they will concede points, but Leinster need to be watertight in D and need to be a lot better than they were against Cardiff, as they realise.
Yeah, I mean, Leinster had their own defensive troubles last week against Cardiff, who I believe should have had their bellies tickled. But if they do, if Leinster do that again, they'll be murdered. Because Wasps have a lot more firepower than Cardiff.
Yeah, like they realised that. They will be pretty hard on themselves. I think there were some difficulties last week in terms of the fact that they had to bring the international guys back in and trying to... It's a really hard balance because, like, it's a big game against Cardiff. You want to stay top of the league, but there's no doubt you got one eye on Wasps from... Like, the coaches have been looking at the Wasps game for 2 months now, and they've been analysing Wasps and prepping and preparing a game plan and thinking about the team that they're going to need to beat... a really strong Wasp side. So that was a challenge to balance that and balance the type of team they want to put out against Cardiff, how they want to play, how many plays they want to show before Wasps, how much they want to give away. So it's really tricky. So they scraped a win. There's no doubt that there'd be no bellies tickled this weekend.
No, they definitely showed showed the if we give you the outside, we won't bother tackling you and you can score tries, which wasn't a good move. But the challenge of actually integrating the players back, because that Leinster team that played last week will not be the same team that turns up against Wasps. So what is the big challenge there?
Well, Fez will give you better insight than I would, because I think for you, Fez, like when you were ingrained in the Irish squad and spent kind of 10 weeks in a row focused on Irish plays and Irish way of playing, and then come back to Ulster for a big European game, like it's tricky. It's a tricky transition.
It is, and you know, you go into Irish camp and Kev will back me up on this, you're handing a sheet and you've maybe 60 line-outs on it, all the different options. You have to cover all the options, especially us in the back row, because you had to learn them all. And then you jump straight out of that system and back into the Ulster system or Leinster or whatever it may be, and you're handed another sheet and you have to update all your line-outs, and it's mentally very challenging. So I would totally agree with Kev about the lads, some of them maybe having an eye on the Wasp fixture. But listen, good teams win when they're not playing well. And Leinster, they didn't play well against Cardiff. Cardiff had a couple of good guys. Big Nick Williams is back to his barnstorming self. Cardiff are an okay team, but Leinster got the win and they're keeping a bit of momentum going. They've got a huge game and they know they're going to have to be a lot better to beat this Wasp side. But to come back in from internationals into your club, it can be very difficult.
Yeah, Jamie Heaslip's out, which is not something you can often say, and he's after a bit of a stretch here with a back injury. But I suppose we do have, there's a couple of players who are still hanging around. Sean O'Brien's back in, Dan Levy, Rhys Ruddock, Josh van der Fleer looked sharp against Cardiff. They're not bad resources to be able to pick from.
Yeah, they're not, and Jamie Heaslip, you're just used to seeing his name on the team sheet week in, week out, and will that have an impact, you know, with his leadership and everything else? It might do. But then again, you have somebody like of Sean O'Brien's ability who can step in and he can play anywhere in the back row. It doesn't, like, he played number 8 the whole way through underage system, a bit like myself. So for me, if he stepped in there, I think Jack Conan might be out with an injury also. But Dan Levy, and for me, is just an incredible talent. Every time I watch him, he's either man of the match or he should get man of the match. And Josh is going to be pushed hard for that 7 jersey with Dan there. It's just brilliant for Leo Collin to have so many options. And even if you pick up an injury or two, you still have a lot of quality there to choose.
Kev, van der Fleer is an important player for the way Leinster try and play.
Yeah, he is. And I think he's done incredible work in the last couple of years to get the level he's at. But he's benefited from Lancaster coming in and the way Leinster play. He's one of the fittest players I know. He will just run all day. He's in incredible shape. He trains really hard. He's a good professional, but he just has a natural engine. He's one of those guys like Chris Henry in Ulster that just doesn't run out of gas. He can play for 150 minutes and he'd still be motoring up and down the park. And he gets through a lot of working games, and he's a really good link player for Leinster. You notice he gets involved a lot in open play, and, you know, passing on to backs, and just that kind of link man in the back and the groundhog man that frees up some of the ball carriers.
Would you say he's a bit like Justin Tipper? He's a kind of that kind of player. He's obviously got a bit of pace as well. You know when he was playing for Ireland, not obviously in the 60s before that. Every time he got the ball, he seemed quite explosive and powerful as well. And it's the same as Justin Tipperick. He seems to be that link man as well. Would you agree?
It's very similar. I think Tipperick, I've got like a huge amount of admiration for. I hated playing against because he was just everywhere. You just see that blue scrum cap everywhere you go. Yeah. Like an absolute pest on the ground. And like he's got a lot of gas. And yeah, I think Josh is a very similar player. And like I said, he's really relished under Lancaster. Yeah. But it's amazing to think that like you got, say, Jordy, Jamie and Jack Conan, well, three internationals injured, and you can still pick a back row like this.
Yeah, it's like you'd imagine that the likes of Levy, who's just had such a great season as well, and you know, there's talk of Reece Ruddock, he said he could step up. He did the number 8 job against Cardiff as well, and then maybe like you could have someone like Josh in reserve or something like that as well. So you could either see Levy or Josh kind of being that kind of guy to come off and make an impact on the bench off the bench. But it's amazing. Yeah, we're just kind of listing out the injuries they had, like Kearney, Heaslip, Conan, Jordy Murphy as well, Sean Cronin, who's back training but not back yet as well, and yet they're still. You could have the likes of McFadden and Dave Kearney been on the bench as well, and as you said, one of those big back row guys, and like the likes of even someone like Rory O'Loughlin as well, like who's maybe he actually has a justified case to start as well. Like so, all of a sudden, these young lads have come true. And they were getting a lot of flack last year, but now you name a team and you're almost leaving some main guys out that you would have picked in the past. And it's amazing to kind of see that they have transitioned so quickly, haven't they? Like,
yeah, and I think like there's a nice mix of coaching setup there, and that Leo is good at the man management side, and Lancaster is very good at bringing through young players. He did in England, and I think England are seeing the benefits now from a lot of the groundwork he laid. Yeah. But you look at the young guys he's brought through and put his faith in, and him and Leo are doing a great job in empowering those guys and getting the most out of them.
And for the match as a whole, I think it can only benefit from having Nigel Owens as referee. He's refereed some belters over the last few years, and big day. It's going to be a big crowd. There's, 40, 45, 50,000 people at the Vivi Stadium?
Yeah.
They could get a treat with this one. I mean, it was 40-odd to 30-odd against Worcester last week. You could easily see the same again. And Leinster will be hoping that the home bias towards quarter-final teams will see them out in this one.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm not sure of the stats, but I think last year, the previous years to last year, first versus eighth come out on top for like 2 or 3 years in a row. So like nothing's a given when it comes to knockout rugby. But the Leinster lads will understand that. For me, Nigel Owens isn't the best referee in the world for refereeing the breakdown. And but if you want a game to be flowing, let go, the 50-50s to be let go, and you want open play, and that's all players really want, is the game to be quick and sped up. But he misses quite a lot as well for me. There's a lot of stuff that could be penalised, but he gets away with it. And the reason everybody loves Nigel Owens is because he lets the game flow, and it's a better spectacle, and that's all everybody wants.
And because of his one-liners.
Yeah, his one-liners, yeah.
But like, it's worth just saying, like, where you see it at the weekend, the very first set piece that Leinster get, they're going to send Robbie Henshaw absolutely hurtling into Jimmy Goppert. I think that'll be a really good attack employee. There's no one that runs harder in Ireland now than Robbie Henshaw, and Jimmy's tough and he's plucky, but he's a small guy. And I think that'll be good go forward for Leinster, sending him into Cipriani and Galbraith.
So that's first game of the weekend. Then we move south to Limerick. Munster play Toulouse, two of the grand old heavyweights of European rugby. In fairness, Toulouse aren't looking brilliant at the moment, 10th in the top 14. Munster have been playing well.
They have been, and ever since the passing of Anthony Foley, they've regrouped, gathered themselves, and realised what Munster rugby is all about and what they're playing for. And there seems to be a lot of pride, and I don't think they've got the best team individually. I don't think they've got the outstanding class and quality that you look through the team sheet of the possible Toulouse team. But what you have to have in rugby is a big heart, and Munster certainly have that, and they've shown that this last 4 or 5 months, the heart and the passion that they have. And it gets you over the line. In tight games, that 1% or 2%, it really does get you over the line. I was just seeing on social media and you know, Conor Murray putting up a picture of him playing against Toulouse, and Simon Zebo putting a picture of him playing against Toulouse in previous years. And I think they're ready to go. I think they're ready to rock and roll. It's going to be a massive task for them, but just the way they're going, the momentum that they've built, the consistency in their performances also. They're not a team that's like Ulster that can play unbelievable rugby one week and beat somebody by 40 or 50 points and then have a mediocre performance the next week. And they're just their consistency in their performance. I think they're going to be very, very hard to stop.
And on the other hand, you got a Toulouse side that have lost their identity for me.
Yeah.
I remember playing Toulouse in the semi-final in 2009, possibly 2010, and like, there's this fear factor going into play them where you just knew you were going to be playing against the big men that played a high tempo and were so hard to stop on their day. But they've gone away from that. I think they pick, like, they have a lot of superstars, but they don't know what Toulouse rugby is about. They've massive men. They don't look particularly well conditioned, though, and they tend to fade out in the last 20, 30 minutes of games. And once or no, they get the tempo up, Toulouse will really, really struggle.
Yeah, we'll have James Cullen on the line in the next segment now. We'll definitely ask him about his feelings about Toulouse having played them this season. But the Munster do have a number of players out, Pat.
Yeah, there's Saidi's out for them. I think Keatley's going to miss the game. And then you have the second row lads, like Sean Klein's out for the rest of the season. And Dave Foley looks like his season could be over as well. So you've got to, like, I suppose you kind of look at their second row. You have Dunnock O'Ryan, who's kind of been in the media a good bit now this weekend, and probably Billy Holland. But then you have this guy that they're allowed to bring over, like, for all the cribbing about kind of, you know, Ryan leaving. You've got Jean Diesel, the super rugby giant of him. I was going to curse there. He's a beast of a man. And so, like, the interesting thing is to see if he starts as well. And
is he going to have his top on this week?
For me, hopefully he has it off for at least a couple of minutes of the game. But yeah, and they're...
But as a team, are we now seeing a team which whatever they've gone through this season as a group, they look more like a senior team than a group of young lads who we probably did consider a lot of them to be a couple of years ago? I mean, is that what we're seeing here with Munster?
I think it's always been there. And when you lose the likes of Ron O'Gara, Paul O'Connell, Peter Stringer, it takes a little time to adjust.
Yeah, you have to reload.
More senior players have got to come through. Pete O'Mahony was out injured for a long time. He's now back. You know, the leadership that he brings is vital to the Munster team. And I just think it's taken a wee bit of time. And look at them now. They're absolutely flying. And they're my tip to go really far in both competitions, in the European Cup and in the league. And just with the heart that they play with, it's really, really difficult to stop.
Yeah, they've got an incentive as well, because unlike Leinster, Munster could get a home semi if they turn over to lose here. I mean, so everyone's clear on this. Leinster cannot get a home semi. If they win, they still will be playing in France in the next round because they face the winners of Toulon and Clermont, who we'll also ask James about. And then if Munster win, they would be at home as long as Glasgow don't beat Saracens.
Yeah,
I've got that right.
Yeah.
Thank you, EPRC, for the wonderful draw. Thank you so much.
You mean they'd have to play? They'd be playing the Aviva.
They would be playing in Ireland. They'd have home country advantage.
Not in Thomond Park.
Not in Thomond Park.
Probably, Stephen, had that kind of thing of like going down with Ulster to play Munster when they were expected to win as well in that quarter final in 2012.
Yeah, like, we were complete underdogs, and as I say, we finished 8th. I can remember playing Clermont away, and Johan Muller sitting in the change room before the match, and he says, right guys, we're currently sitting in economy here on the plane, you know, if we win this game we'll be flying business class to the semi-final. And like, this is our captain sitting there going, right, and everybody was like, right, I want to go business class. I'm going business class today. And we should have won that match against Clermont. Like, we played much better rugby with so many opportunities. I think it was Nathan Hines was getting away with murder that day. we should have won the match, but again, we just fell in. We were there, we qualified, we hadn't qualified for a while, and we get in and we went to Thomond Park. And you talk about players, big name players stepping up to the plate, you know, Tom Court, you know, who, you know, maybe took a bit of criticism over the years internationally, but he was unbelievable that day. John Afoa, Ruan Pienaar kicking penalties from the halfway. I was playing quite well. Chris Henry, Craig Gilroy scored the try of the season. It was voted try of the season. So for things to go your way, you need a little bit of luck, but everybody has to be on top of their game. And one or two of the Munster lads weren't. and that's why we got over the line, and we won quite convincingly in the end, but it was a great game. And then we had to travel down to the Viva Stadium for the semi-final against Edinburgh, which is a difficult one, because you know you're, you know, if you play half decent that you're going to win, if that makes sense. But when we got to the final, we just got blown away by the best team in Europe that season.
Yeah, you were both named at six in that game. The you didn't last as long, Fez.
Oh, I played 80 minutes.
Did you?
Yeah, I played 80 minutes.
My memory's completely wrong then.
Yeah, no, you're thinking of somebody else. No, yeah. Do you know what? Kev and Shawnee O'Brien, it was in the middle of the field, and I took a ball, like standing like this, and Kev smashed me from one side, and Shawnee O'Brien smashed me from the other side. And I was like maybe about 33, 35 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
And I tore my calf straight away, and I went in at half time, and I was like, we were sort of still in the game at half time. I think Ruan kicked a long penalty just before the half time whistle and tore my calf. And I was like, getting in at half time, I was like, I need to get off the pitch here. And I was wheeled out, and I played 80 minutes. Yeah, and then I couldn't go on the tour to New Zealand.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks later, because I tore my calf. Yeah. So.
So we'll take a break now, and we're going to come back with an interview with James Collin, former Munster man, currently playing in Poa, who was the number 8 that day in Thomond Park when you lads turned Munster over. The only quarter final Munster have ever lost at home. And yeah, Fez, you're responsible. So we'll be back in a second with James Collin.
Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
We have been joined on the line by James Collin, formerly of Munster, now of French top 14 side Po. James, how are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you?
Not too bad. We're all a bit jealous. What temperature is it over there right now?
Yeah, it's just a 22. We'll be all right. I'll have the factor 50 on later there. No, so it'll be all right. Don't worry.
Yeah, what first attracted you to the lifestyle in 22 degrees?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Nothing to do with the wine and the weather, yeah, go on.
You're over there a couple of years now, how's it going for you?
Yeah, it's gone great. Obviously the first year was the big year really, because we needed to get promoted. So that was the challenge then we came over. And obviously the... You know, Simon had done a bit of work behind the scenes, and before he spoke to me, you know, with the new players like Damien Troy and John Boyou, who, you know, won French leagues and won European Cups and stuff. So it was a good base of local French lads who were just, you know, needed to tip over the edge a small, because they got to the final and the semi final a couple of years in a row. And yeah, so it's gone really well. And second year, we stayed up, which was the important thing. And then we were able to recruit fellas like Conrad and Sadie and Tom Taylor and Steph and stuff. So we've been able to kick on this year now as well. And you know, we're up at the good end of the table, and we're pushing on hopefully now to try and get that Champions Cup spot for next year, you know.
Yeah, and you're in well positioned now, I think fifth on the table at the moment, with a little bit of a cushion underneath you. And we're looking ahead to the Champions Cup quarterfinals this weekend. Munster, your old team, facing Toulouse, who aren't doing brilliantly in the top 14.
Yeah, no, it's been tough for them. They haven't, I think actually we beat them up in Toulouse or start of January, and they've struggled since. But it's kind of looking like this is to actually stay in the Champions Cup. It might be the only way of them doing it, is to actually win the thing. So I think, you know, Munster will certainly get their best of the weekend. It's always a massive weekend, especially the history between the two clubs. And the boys at home will have to be right on their game to beat them, because there's plenty of quality in that team, you know.
So out of interest, if you were coaching Munster this weekend, what would you be targeting about Toulouse?
They're big ball carriers. This guy, Joe DeCorey, Richie, you know, the Gray. I'm not sure if Richie Gray is injured or if he's fit or not to play. They kind of play you know, kind of like France, you know, obviously Guinoves is a massive influence, a big ball carrier's carrying around the corner, nine attacking the fringes, and then, you know, just trying to flood that channel. So, the, you know, first up, I know Munster's defence has been amazing, and that's what they'll be looking to set out, with that low tackle focus and just stopping the offloads, and then, you know, keeping the scoreboard in front of you. If you keep the scoreboard in front of you, then, you know, Toulouse will have to chase again then, and I think Munster could actually go on and win it quite nicely in the end if they get a good start and actually get a few scores on the board early.
I'm going to bring Fez in on that. So you've got big ball carrying forwards there for Toulouse. How do you stop that? Is it the chop tackle, or is it going man, ball, everything to target the offload?
Man and ball, you give my book a plug, are you? Thanks very much. I think James is right. They'll be tackling low, but they'll also be trying to tag the ball as well. So I'm sure there'll be a double man focus getting in and stopping those guys. But Munster are always incredibly strong and powerful at the breakdown. And I think they'll be getting over the ball quite a bit, making the Toulouse team concede penalties. We know from the past that, you know, their discipline isn't great, and if Munster can build a score, then the seed of doubt is sown into the minds of the Toulouse lads. And I think I agree with James. You know, I think they could run out worthy winners in the end. But, you know, you got to make those tackles. It's easier said than done. These big men, Joe Decorey coming around the corner, 130 kilos. You know, you have to put them down. But Munster's defence has been really good this season. And if they keep playing with the passion, as I said earlier on, then I think they're going to be difficult to stop. But you just never know with French rugby what they're going to throw at you. And Toulouse could have the game of their lives, and they could really push Munster. But we all know how strong Munster are at home.
James, in your experience now over a couple of years, I know we trot this out all the time. You never know with French rugby. Is it the same on the ground over there in the top 14?
It is and it isn't. I suppose the difference between the top 14 is that there's pressure on everybody. You have to win, because if you don't, you'll go down. So you can go to places where maybe European wise teams like Brive or, you know, Cass mightn't really be too concerned about it, because they're putting massive focus on that, on their top 14 competition. So that's why there is that kind of enigma when the French teams, I suppose, turn to the European one, because it's the pressure is off nearly, you know, that they can go and play, they can go and express themselves during the top 14. It's a very long season. It's a very competitive season. Everybody is, in good form, and they're the big games for the teams like Munster and Leinster are coming to France, coming to places like Montpellier, Clermont, those big teams that have got an unbelievable reputation. But I think the difference between the two is, as I said, the pressure is a little bit is maybe released on the European one, for the bigger teams, and that they can just go and express themselves, because, you know, there's a huge amount of quality in all the teams on the Champions Cup, and there's, you know, guys who won World Cups and Tri Nations and you name it, they've done it, you know. So I think that's maybe the difference. I think that's why there is that kind of an enigma coming, you know, that comes along with the Champions Cup, is that the French teams just go and express themselves and see where that lands them then, basically.
So you have moving on, I suppose, slightly to next season already. You've got a couple of Irish players already at Poe, and we've got a big name Irishman who looks to be going to Racing, Dunnick O'Ryan. That's an interesting move. Did you hear any chat about that at all?
No, sometimes you just ignore the papers, because fellas' contracts are their own business, you know, because you never really know, you know, there's always chat and there's always pressure, and then, you know, it's tough for the players. I think the boys will testify it as well, you know, you hear these things and you see these things in the paper, and it can be very difficult, because it puts you in a difficult situation with your own club then, and you're going, Christ, that was the first I heard about it, I was gone somewhere. But if it is true and it's confirmed, it's a great move for Dunica. First and foremost, you know, he's going to be playing with a fantastic team with a great, you know, quality, and he's got the cushion of Raj being there as well, kind of showing the ropes of Paris and stuff. But it's hard to comment on something. It's kind of just speculation at the moment. I know Razzy has kind of commented on us, and it's until you actually get the actual call from Dunnick himself and saying, listen, yeah, it's true. What will I do? Where do I pay my bills and all that kind of carry on? Then I wouldn't really, you know, like to say one way or the other. It'll be difficult for Munster if it is, if that's the case, because Donoghue is such a big part of the dressing room. He's so respected in the group because he's been there for so long and he's done pretty much everything. You know, I don't know how many caps he has for Ireland. He's been in European Cup winning squads and teams. He's won leagues and, you know, it'd be a shame for Munster if that's what happens. But it, like, you know, Donoghue needs to look after himself as well and needs to do what's right for him and what down the future for him after rugby as well, you know. So, look, as I said, it's kind of difficult to comment on it until it's confirmed. But, you know, if it's true, then it's great for Donoghue. If it's not, then, you know, it's difficult for Donoghue because he's trying to do a contract negotiation with Munster and the IRC at the same time, you know. So I hope in one sense it's true that he's, you know, that he's able to go on that it isn't just speculation for him, but yeah, until it's confirmed, it's kind of hard to really say what's going on, you know.
So James makes an interesting point there because he talks about the Munster contract negotiation and also the IRFU one. So Fez, I know earlier on off air you tore me a new one for using the term dual contract because that isn't how it works.
No, it's different. I think there's a lot of national contracts out there. I think the Leinster players have the fair share of those. I know I was on a national contract when I was with Ulster, so when my agent went to negotiate a contract, he wasn't going to the CEO of Ulster Rugby or David Humphreys, who was in charge back then, going, right, this is what Stevie Ferris is worth. He was going to the RFU directly and negotiating that. So it's disappointing that, by all accounts, I think Donoghue wasn't given a contract by the RFU. And like, Donoghue has to look after number one. You know, you got to look after number one. And if a big offer comes on the table, a great club like Racing comes in, then why wouldn't he go and try something else? He's 33. I think he's playing the best rugby of his career at the minute, and he was out for a long period of time with a bad toe injury, but he's come back, he's shown his worth, he's shown that he's a proud Munster man, an Irish man, and he's a potential Lion now for the summer. He's played that well. But yeah, it's a difficult one, but at the same time, clubs all around the world are very quickly, you know, once you're done with the club, they get rid of you and bring in somebody else, so you've always got to look after yourself when it comes to these situations. And I think it's disappointing from an RFU point of view that they didn't offer him something because he's going to be a massive loss, as James says, the Munster and Irish rugby.
That's what we're saying. He's been, like, they've been made to look pretty foolish now because maybe that decision had maybe made maybe September, October. They do make a lot of decisions earlier in the season, and
there's not many central contracts. Let's
be
clear on
this. Yeah, there's only around, we reckon around maybe, I think there was only 14 last season, but it could be up to around 15 or 16 now because they're coming into a World Cup cycle again. But Ryan is. He's had a brilliant Six Nations, I think, up there with maybe Stander and Henshaw, Ireland's best player. And now, all of a sudden, that decision's been made, and the RFU are made to look pretty foolish as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's 33 years old, but like Fez said, he like had a lot of injuries. He doesn't have that many miles on the clock. And he's playing the best rugby I've ever seen him play. And the big thing for me is Ireland we're not awash with second rows and experienced second rows in particular. And I think what James is saying in terms of what he adds to the changing room, like I've experienced in a couple of Irish camps with him, and he's very steady voice. He speaks a lot of sense. He's important in terms of line out planning. Those kind of things make a big difference, and that level of experience he has will be difficult to replace. And it's going to be a good test now of the kind of policy that the RFU have informally applied of not picking guys who leave the country if he does decide to go. So yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting one, and it'll be, if he does move, a huge loss for Irish rugby.
Why was he not given an Irish contract? Why was there nothing on the table? Was it because, was this decision made 6 months ago? Or, you know, it'd be pretty foolish for the RFU to make a decision on somebody's contract before a Six Nations when, you know, a guy, they can easily change their mind and put a contract in front of him. And I think the point was made last night on the Facebook Live, also on the show, that Jimmy Heaslip's only 4 days younger than Donoghue Ryan, but yeah, Jimmy Heaslip has a pretty hefty national contract that is paying good wages. So, you know, why doesn't Donoghue Ryan's made to be like this old guy who's now moving to France for the last couple of years of his career and everything else? But Kev's completely right. He doesn't have a lot of miles on the clock. He's only so much more to offer. So, yes, there are a few might have made a decision 6 months ago that, you know, maybe going forward, Donoghue Ryan isn't part of the plan. But when he has a Six Nations like he did, why can they not change their mind and put something in front of them? And that's, I'd say that's frustrating. And Donegal Ryan, I'm sure, is a bit peed off that nothing was put in front of him. But you have to look after number one.
So we'll get confirmation at some point about Donegal Ryan's future plans. James, before we let you go, your future plans. I mean, I suppose, do you know how many years have you got left playing, do you reckon? Oh, and then what are you going to do after that?
I don't know yet. I haven't really thought about it a whole lot, you know, and that's been awesome pull. After rugby, I'm going to look at going into coaching. I've spoken with the guys in Marcosi here about doing the diplomas going forward, just the same as Raj and I suppose Prendy and those lads have done. But no, life is good here. You know, we're happy. We have the house and the kids are in settling in school and stuff like that. So it's really become home. You know, it's more like a holiday home now for my parents at this stage. So it's just coming home. I'm from back so much, but no, long term is the plan is to stay to get into coaching and to have a look at you know, staying in rugby and progressing through that. But yeah, as I said, we'll see how the body goes now for a while yet. You know,
good man. So we'll see James Cullen rising through the French coaching ranks. Thank you very much for your time today. Up next,
no problem.
Up next, we will look ahead to the odds for this weekend's rugby with Alex Donoghue from Ladbrokes.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes, passionate about sport.
We're back with Alex Donoghue from Ladbrokes. Alex, hello.
Hello, good morning, guys.
What have you guys got as the odds for the weekend's rugby?
So we're looking at the Champions Cup, or as I like to prefer to remember it, the Heineken Cup odds for the weekend. Looking like some really decent games, actually. We'll start with the tightest game as far as the betting is concerned, which probably I think looks like it's going to be the best game of the weekend. Leinster hosting Wasps. Leinster are the odds on favourites to win the game, 8-15 to win it without the handicap. Wasps 6-4. And the handicap line is priced at 4 points. So we're looking at all four games, all four of the favourites. All the teams you'd expect to be odds on are all long odds on, but Leinster are the ones that the bookies think if any of the favourites are going to slip up this weekend. Ladbrokes, we think Wasps probably have the best chance of causing what would be considered an upset. They're 6-4. A couple of punters have been backing them actually at 6-4 to win that game, and 4 points on the handicaps. I'm not sure what your guys' opinion is, whether you think Leinster are the weakest of the four favourites this week, or if you think you can only see a one-way victory for them. I'm not sure. What do you think?
Yeah, for me, Stevie Ferris here. For me, I always bet on the spread. Always go on the spread. It just with the odds. Is it 10-11 or 11-10 on the odds on the spread?
Yeah, 10-11 on the spread, and we're giving 4 points to Wasps, taking 4 points away from Leinster. So, like I said, the early action on these games is backing Wasps on the spread with the four and backing them from scratch. So I think, like I say, they look like the most popular underdog of the weekend's games.
Yeah, I would probably go with Leinster -4, to be honest.
you're that confident, are you?
Yeah. They're at home. Yeah. They've a point to prove after a disappointing performance last week. Yeah. They've an experienced guy like Johnny Sexton coming back, and I think they're just better up front. It doesn't matter about their back row with the injuries that they have. They're just better. You've seen the Wasps team get over the line against Toulouse in the group stages, but they got demolished up front, absolutely demolished. And even Connacht gave them a run up front as well. So for me, I know there's a lot of punters going the other way, but I would probably take Leinster -4 points.
Okay, Alex, the Munster game?
Yeah, Munster, they are even shorter favourites. They're 1-5 to lose 7-2. And if we're looking at the spread, it's 9 points. So I know that the French teams don't always necessarily travel very well, and we're not giving them too much of a chance here. So would you say the double, Munster -9, Leinster -4, looks a fair double for this weekend? Or do you think that you give Toulouse a squeak of making it a bit closer?
Again, I don't. Yeah, I would probably go with Munster -9. I just think the way they're playing at the minute. When it comes to betting, and I would bet quite a bit now that I'm retired and I can bet, it's brilliant and nobody's checking up on me.
It's brilliant. Our share price has gone up in the last few years.
Well, in fairness, Ladbrokes do give the best odds, and I do gamble with those guys. But it's a tight one, and there's always one or two that slip up. But for me, this Munster team, I think they'll put this Toulouse team to the sword just the way they're playing. But it's rugby, it's knockout rugby, and anything can happen on the day. But for me, yeah, double would go very nicely with Leinster -4, Munster -9.
Any decent accumulator on that, Alex?
Yeah, we're looking at the big four. I mean, this is a great thing about betting. When we talk about it on paper, it all looks so easy, and then obviously the games go underway, and it kind of can go a little bit pear-shaped. But when you look at the big four teams, all the favourites this weekend, Clermont, Leinster, Munster and Saracens, if you put those four teams in a double, not even on handicaps, just to win the games, sorry, a double, a fourfold, it's 6-4 for all four of those teams to win, which I think looks really, really popular. And then if you put them each in on their handicaps, the odds are going to be even bigger than that. You're going to be looking at close to 10-1 for them to more cover their respective handicaps. But I like the look of the double there, both the Irish teams to cover. But my money, I think I'm going to play a little bit safer. I'll just go all four favourites to win on Friday night, 6-4 for me. So they can win by 1 point, they can win by 100 points, it doesn't matter. But I think if there was to be an upset, it would be the Wasps beating Leinster. That's where some of the punters have been putting their money down early doors. But for me, I think all four favourites will get the job done, and we'll see them march on into the semis of this cup tournament.
So we haven't really talked about the last two semi-finals, Saracens Glasgow and Clermont Toulon. Glasgow, there's talk of them bringing 5,000 fans to this. I mean, this is a big weekend for Pro 12 and for Scottish rugby, Pat.
Yeah, there was it, and yeah. they do bring a lot of travelling support. Even you sometimes go to a Connacht game and they'll have like 300 or 400 that have travelled over as well. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise you that they've got this kind of loyal set of fans that are going to go over to this game. And that's, but like, you know, like Saracens are absolutely brilliant side in the last few years. But you know, that if a lot of people are, if you're looking at shocks this weekend, you know, you could, you know, do worse than actually look at Glasgow, because they're on their day, like they're an absolute, like a gnarly kind of, you know, they're a hardened kind of team. They've ruffled up a lot of the Irish sides in the last, you know, couple of years. And yeah, you wouldn't look beyond them if they get a lot of their lads back from the Six Nations as well, who are on form. Yeah, you like, I think if I was going for a side maybe to cause a bit of a shock, maybe this weekend I'd go for Glasgow.
Alex, what do you think about that? What's your spread for that one?
Yeah, 11-2 Glasgow, so 5.5-1. It's a big price. Saracens are 1-10. As far as the bookies can see, it's a certainty, but looks fairly likely. It's interesting what you say about the Glasgow fans travelling over. I know Scottish rugby seems to be really on the up at the moment. There seems to be a bit of a feel-good factor at the moment, obviously, given the setup there. There's so many of those players that were involved in Glasgow as well, so you can see why you might latch on to them. I think if you're looking at the handicap, 14 points is the handicap that we give Glasgow, so on that basis it might sound quite generous giving them a 14-point start at the Saracens, and 11-2 to cause an upset. Like I say, that they haven't been particularly popular so far with the punters. Like I say, the one that they think is Wasps, if you would even consider that an upset. But Glasgow, if anyone thinks that thousands of travelling fans are going to get something to shout about, 11-2 for them to win the game, which I'm sure some of those fans might think that might be worth a quid or two.
And just before we wrap it up, the final quarter-final, Alex, Clermont and Toulon, two of European rugby's heavyweights over the last couple of years. What have you guys got for that?
Yeah, the French powerhouses, 1-4 Clermont, 11-4 Toulon. The handicap is 8 points. So far, I've been quiet on this one, actually. The punters can't really make their mind up which way they want to play on the handicap. I expect we'll see money for the favourite for Clermont, just because that's normally how it all goes down. But yeah, they at the moment, Toulon, not particularly popular, and obviously Clermont are the favourites to win the tournament outright. Sorry, second favourites to win the tournament outright as well, behind Saracen. So they're expected to do business against Toulon. If you think Toulon are going to beat Clermont, it might be better to actually back them to go all the way. They're currently 12-1. So if they were to beat Clermont away from home, then their odds would come in massively to win the whole thing. But no, at the moment, it looks pretty straightforward for the favourites.
Okay. Time to wrap it up. Stephen Ferris, thank you very much. Thank you, Kev McLaughlin. Thank you, Pat McCarry. Thank you, James Collin, for dialing in from France. And thank you, Alex Donoghue from Ladbrokes. Joe Harrington is our producer and Shane Dempsey is on sound. Get in touch by tweeting any of us or at sportsshow.ie and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud or through your favourite podcast app. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thanks again for listening and we'll see you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Ladbrokes. Passionate about sport.